Listen to the voices of our world.
It's very hard to understand what it is to be a survivor of war.
It's good to be alive and out of there and be here and to be able to tell this.
Our children are going through this all over the world. They are ours. And I can't believe that this is happening. I can't believe it. I hate it.
People fighting a war because they want to end terrorism. I say to you, you're planting it.
This movie creates consciousness. It brings the notion of peace.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Colombia, Iraq, Sudan, Chechnya. You may decide that this particular conflict or that particular war is justified. I, on the other hand, may disagree with you. I may see the very same war as baseless. But you would think that people everywhere could agree on at least one thing, that the pursuit of war is an adult failure, fought by adults, won or lost by adults. But right now, in 33 civil wars around the world, about 300,000 children, under 18 years, many as young as 8, are serving in, not shielded from, battle. They are soldiers, porters, sex slaves, decoys, and human landmine detectors. The latest movie by acclaimed film director Luis Mandoki, Innocent Voices, concedes the waste of war, viewing brutality through the eyes of a little boy trying desperately not to become a soldier. We're about to speak with both the film's director, Luis Mandoki, and with the writer of Innocent Voices, Oscar Torres, the man who was that little boy. What were you up to at age 11, besides no good? My teacher was Mrs. Devlin, very nice woman. Sorry, Mrs. Devlin. Sorry, really sorry, really sorry. In my 11th year, I suddenly converted from the conviction that eggs are disgusting to a brief obsession with fried egg sandwiches. My academic downfall was incessant daydreaming, and that daydreaming revolved around horses, some blonde kid with a buzz cut, and horses. Yes, I know that's not a compelling storyline, but if you're lucky, childhood was just that boring and predominantly sweet. So age-wise, at about the same point in life when I was musing about sunny-side-up lunches, a sandy-haired boy named John Clifford, I think that was his name, and a Palomino horse named Harry, a little boy in El Salvador was using his daydreams as frantic distraction to block out the reality that both the government's army and the rebel opposition were threatening to claim his boyhood. In the 1980s, El Salvador, the smallest but most densely populated of the Central American republics, descended into the roiling hell of military junta versus guerrilla army. It didn't take long for both armies to begin forcibly recruiting 12-year-old boys right out of the classroom if necessary. In Luis Mandoki's film, Innocent Voices, the audience meets a very thoughtful little boy named Chava, savoring every last moment of being 11. With his father gone, Chava and his hard-working single mom are each other's support and co-defenders of the last shred of normalcy left for two younger siblings. At night, bullets whiz through windows, and the children dive under a mattress. By day, Chava pantomimes driving a bus, making motor noises with his lips, as if to drown out the sound of gunfire that still plays in his head. I grew up without much challenge. Chava, or rather the writer who invented him, Oscar Torres, had nothing but. El Salvador's civil war ended in January 1992 with the signing of a peace accord. The real-life Chava, Oscar, survived, made it to the United States in 1986, and later, while working in Los Angeles, he met Mexican-born film director Luis Mandoki. Torres had turned his childhood nightmares into a vivid autobiographical screenplay, and so a partnership and a movie were born. Mandoki's films have included Message in a Bottle, When a Man Loves a Woman, and 24 Hours. After a screening of Innocent Voices, Kathy Golden talked with both Oscar Torres and Luis Mandoki.
Tell me the genesis of how this project gets started.
Well, I was in a moment where I was a little frustrated with the fact that, you know, I've received a lot of great things from Hollywood, and I've had a career thanks to Hollywood, and I learned a lot there. Made movies that were very close to my heart, but also after a while, they tend to pigeonhole you. Mm-hmm. Once you make a successful movie, they want you to do it over and over again. And I was longing to find something that would be closer to my heart, that would take me ideally back to my roots in Mexico. Because I had been making movies in Hollywood for 16 years. I was born in Mexico, raised there. The next day the phone rings and I get offered a commercial for AT&T, which is not exactly what I was looking for, but it was in Spanish, so I took it. And at the end of one of the shooting days, one of the actors came to me and said, "Sir, can I give you this script?" And that actor was Oscar. And, you know, you get a lot of scripts like that, and most of them are trash. But with him, something about his eyes, I liked the guy, and I took the script with me. And one day I started reading it. One in the morning, I couldn't put it down. And I realized this was going to be my next movie.
Oscar, forgive me for saying this, but having seen the film twice now, it's so good to see you alive and in person.
Thank you. Well, it's good to be alive and out of there and be here and to be able to tell this.
Did something compel you to write it?
Well, what inspired me to write was the song that was prohibited at the time called Cardboard Houses, Casas de Cartón, which was something that was beautiful to me to listen in the middle of it and to a lot of people in El Salvador, and it was banned by the government. That's what really inspired me to write it. The process of doing it was, besides living it, I think was the hardest thing I've ever had to do because it was a roller coaster of emotions again. As much as I had found pain, I found humor. So I found a great moment in the middle of a really bad situation and the same, same way around. So it was very difficult. But when in the rewrites, I had Luis pretty much holding my hand through it all and guiding me through it and allowing me to express that, and break down in the middle of it and be able to keep writing and then be okay. So I think it's necessary for anyone who's gone through anything tough in their lives to go back to it because it explains a lot about the person who you are.
I mean this in a complimentary way. It is a very painful movie to watch. I mean, I grew up in New York City, so I'm used to hearing loud noises in the middle of the night. But on several of the scenes where the bullets are flying in your house, I jumped each and every time. What's the decision-making process like for you as a director? How far do I go portraying violence?
Well, I think what I found fascinating about Oscar's story is that, yes, it shows you realities we never knew about. And also, we've never, thank God, experienced, like having dinner at home and suddenly bullets start crossing your walls. But also, the contrast of, after going through terrible moments like that, the spirit of these children who never give up not only their innocence, but also their willing to play, their need to be children, and how they invent magic in the middle of horror, how they are able to find ways to hide in the rooftops while soldiers are recruiting children and they cannot move, which for children is a big deal. And night comes and instead of crying, they start counting stars. When Chava goes to school and a shooting can start in the middle of a day at any time, he stops by this girl who he has a crush on and loves and starts singing La Mochila Azul, this song. And so the need and this expression of love and tenderness and the first kiss in the middle of war, for me, it reminds you that we were all children once, reminds you that we all went through moments like that. But fortunately, we didn't go through them in the middle of war, and how he was able to not only survive that, but for his spirit to survive. You know, while we were working on the script, a lot of the scenes that are in the movie were not originally there. And for him, his life was ordinary, you know. I asked him once, "So what was your struggle as a child? What was your dilemma?" He said, "Well, my dilemma was that I had to choose whether to join the guerrilla or the army, and I didn't want to join either. I wanted to be a child and play." I said, "What do you mean you had to choose?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I mean, because the soldiers, when you become 12, they came and took you." And I said, "What do you mean they came and took you?" So the recruitment of children was not in the original script. And so once he said that, I said, "Well, let's talk about this. And how did they come?" And he started telling me, "Well, sometimes they would come to school, sometimes they would come to the house." and just go through all the houses and take whoever they found. So we would hide in the roofs. And so suddenly I realized, I didn't know that children were being recruited in El Salvador in the 80s at the age of 12. And then I started finding out that it not only happened then, but it's happening today in many other countries. And so suddenly the movie started growing. And at one point I asked them, because I felt, okay, we're getting all these amazing scenes, but what is the movie really about? And I didn't know. So I asked him, did you ever pull the trigger? He just went dead. And he said, that's not important for the film. And I said, why not? And he said, I don't want to talk about it. It's not important. I said, well, did you ever hold a gun? And he said, I told you. I draw the line here. And I got, and I said, okay, so stay with your script.
Mm-hmm. Stupid script.
And I left the room. And I came back half an hour later, and he was crying. And I said, so tell me about it. And so he tells me the scene at the end of the movie where he makes the big decision of not pulling the trigger. And I thought it was an amazing scene, a very heroic moment. And I asked him, why didn't you want to tell me? And as we talked, he felt guilty about it. He felt guilty because he almost killed another human being who was a child. And he also felt guilty because he didn't kill a soldier who had killed his friends and many innocent people. And at that point, I realized, as much as you can learn, it's very hard to understand what it is to be a survivor of war. You go through so much that for us, it's normal that that scene is a heroic scene. For him, it wasn't. He felt guilty that he survived. Like we've heard many times, war survivors feel guilty about it because others didn't. And he felt guilty that he left because he didn't stay to fight and defend other people who did die. And he was only 12 years old. And so you realize in human terms, the cost of war is not only the people that die in it, but how it scars the people that do survive. And you see the effects for decades.
Why would they conscript people that young? The decision-making process of a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, 12-year-old is questionable.
Well, mainly they run out of the adults. A lot of them were heading to fight for the rebels. And so the army needed more manpower to be able to accommodate all the aid they were getting from the United States in form of money and a lot of arms and weapons. But they didn't have enough manpower to do it, so they started recruiting children as young as 12. After I left, the age went down to 9.
And also, for the army, every kid was a potential guerrilla. And so if they didn't take them, the guerrilla could take them.
Casa del explotado.
How old is old enough to make the life and death decisions that come with handling a lethal weapon? Email us. Go to www.marynoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or call us, 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.
Hace muchos, muchos años que está mordiendo al obrero.